This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and we're back again, and we're going to give you time, lots and lots of time, because if you don't ever make time, you can never have time. Movie reference, everybody. And not alone here, I'm going to spend my time with Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hello, hello. Indeed, we have a time commitment, and we are not going to underestimate this time commitment. We are going to give it an appropriate amount of time.
I think when we started this podcast 8 years ago, I severely underestimated the time commitment.
Yeah, that's probably fair. However, 8 years wiser, we now have a fairly good handle on the time commitment that this takes. And unfortunately, because it's a, what do you call it, a new space? Maybe not a new space, but a newer space in terms of its mass adoption, we are back indeed continuing to talk about the reasons why AI projects fail. And the next reason is all about underestimating the time commitment needed. I mean, this to me feels like, I mean, I don't know. So many of these feel to me like they're very basic, sort of very simple things. But this feels like one of the more basic, more simple things. You're taking a still relatively new, still fast evolving, very complex, in my mind at least, technology, using it to solve a business problem where you want presumably a high quality, high degree of confidence in the output so you can rely on it. I mean, that to me feels like something that's probably going to take some time.
Oh God, so much to unpack there. Okay, first off, I think most of the reasons projects fail are basic. Because of complicated things, people take notice of. Mm. They actually do investigations and analysis and all of that stuff. It's the basic, simple things that people just assume, great word, it's going to be okay. So, yeah, I'm not surprised about that at all, to be honest.
Mm. And
what was the second part of your narrative? I have to start paying attention to what you say.
Might be an idea. I mean, it was really about the fact that like this is something complicated. Most people are like doing this, I would say, for the first time, beyond maybe basic, some simple experiments.
What is the main reason they do this at the moment? To save time.
Mm.
And it's totally illogical to expect that a solution that everybody tells you should use because it's going to save you so much time and effort. Well, if it's going to save me time, it can't take much time. Obviously, no. But it's very normal, I think, to expect that people react that way. That if you get a time-saving solution, I mean, nobody thinks if I buy a car, it's going to take me 18 years until I can drive that car. Although that is exactly what happened. We all had to live for at least 14 to 16 years before we were able to get a driver's license and learn to ride a car. But now if you buy a new car, yeah, easy. You just step in and do the thing. But with AI, we're still in that first 18 years learning what the thing actually is. And we're not appreciating that enough.
Yeah, some of this I think comes down to, I mean, I think some of this is related to the previous sort of overconfidence in artificial intelligence as well. The overconfidence and the fact that people are seeing like amazing results, especially again going back to generative AI, seeing amazing results from putting a prompt in front of an individual and like amazing results coming out of it, seems like, and it is true for certain very specific use cases, for very little investment in time, you can get amazing results. And that is true for a very, very narrow sliver of all of the things that people are trying to achieve. A lot of the things that people are trying to achieve require a lot more customization, a lot more training. If you're going to train, then you need a lot more data in order to do that training. That data ideally needs to be, you know, clean or cleaner than maybe, you know, people are used to dealing with data. You want to try and make sure that you're doing as much as you can to reduce bias in that data set and that sort of thing. And like, there's a lot of things behind the scenes, I think, beyond just deploying an algorithm and being, yeah, press button, go boom.
Apparently not boom, press button, go, period.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, what if boom was your desired end result? But yeah.
Nah, let's not go there. I did listen this time. I make some notes as well, so I should be able to respond to your eloquent discourse there. I answered that one. Yeah. I mean, there's also two different ways that people interact with these technologies, right? You have the consumers of the technologies and the ones that are putting it in place. Now, from a consumer point of view, if you're visiting a website and that thing has an AI-enabled contact form, search function, whatever, there is no time, no effort spent. It's just there as a service to you. Okay, so we're not talking about that, right? We're talking about the other part of the equation, the people behind the scenes that are using this stuff to make that search bar, that thing happening. And those people are underestimating the time required to get this all up and running. And there's actually two parts of that time spent. The first part is getting it up and running, the deployment, the systems, because it's not that easy. Depending if you're downloading a model from Hugging Face or whatever, you need to have an infrastructure around that thing, because that model itself is not consumption ready. You need to have a programming stuff in place, you need to have containers up and running, you have to think about scalability, because a model that takes 4 gigabytes of RAM, for example, is able to do one question at a time, and that question will take a couple of seconds, perhaps. I don't know. If you have a website that has potentially 100 queries per minute, you will probably need more than one, and you don't want them all running day and night. So you need to have a scheduling orchestration layer set up with Kubernetes things, microservices. There's a lot of stuff to deploy, test, because most of these things are customer facing. So if they fail, it's immediately on down radar and in media that the site blah blah was down. So you need to spend time to do this. And any kind of IT project that has all of these components, that's easily half a year. The big difference with the artificial intelligence is that's not where you're done. That's when it starts. So any IT project needs to do all these things. So people are used to this and they calculate that in. So that's kind of the time they use the project for. But the thing with artificial intelligence is that those models become stale very, very quickly. Okay, it's not in a second or a minute, but you need to be ready to retrain the model if you can, because I'm going to add to that later, not always possible. But it's something that's iterative. You have to do it again and again and again, and not just retrain it, but also measure how it's performing and see how you need to retrain it. Because retraining it on can be two ways. You can do a different algorithm, perhaps, or you can change your data set. Changing the algorithm, typically not a good thing, because these algorithms are very specific. You want to predict something, regression. You want to classify, they say something is good or bad, that's classification. You want to do text completion, that's generative AI. That's typically not where you can change things. But you can retrain by using new data, by augmenting your existing data set with new incoming data, fresher data, newer data, data from more cultures, blah, blah, blah. But you need to monitor how your model works to know what it is missing at some point. And as you mentioned in the last episode, scoring, testing, benchmarking models is very hard because it's non-deterministic. How the hell do you do this? So you need to figure that out as well, and then be ready to, ad infinitum, I think, retrain periodically, reassess, A/B test, and so on. And that's an ongoing thing. And where a lot of software development projects have kind of a start, a runtime, and an end, this never has an end. And it's always astonishing when I go to customers that they still have this mindset. Once we have deployed it and it's, our chatbot is running, let's move on to something else. No, you need a whole department that just keeps that thing running. And bigger companies are starting to get this now. So typically the data science, data engineering department is taking up this hurdle now. But the, how do you call that? Not commercialization, but the commoditization of this whole AI thing through Gen AI is making a whole different range, a different class of organizations looking at this, also trying to leverage this this golden mana from the heavens. And they, I'm not going to say they don't have a clue, because I do think there's more and more failures are hitting the press as well. So it is getting more of a, oh yeah, we have to be careful with this. But still, a lot of people are incredibly, is naive the word I want to use? Maybe not, but they just don't expect the effort and time required to make something like this functional, effective, productive, and keep on doing that.
Yeah, I think it's the, I think you've got the sort of the time it takes to actually get a good output in the first place is kind of the, that in itself, I think is, you're right, is drastically underestimated. But I think people don't at all think about what happens once the project's gone live. I think that's an area that is almost completely missed. And
it's also still a big undiscovered country, because this Gen AI definitely has been around long enough to know what the load is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, some of this, how much of this do you think is, I genuinely don't know the answer to this question, hence me asking it. How much of this do you think is made easier or made more difficult by the fact that a lot of these vendors have SaaS solutions that they want you to just incorporate into whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. How much of this sort of, because to my mind, in typically with a SaaS solution, it's, or in a lot of cases, you adopt a SaaS solution when you're doing something already, you like what it is, you like the way it works, but you don't want to run the thing yourself anymore. You want someone else to run it. You pay them money, you get back time in terms of like, think of a standard SaaS solution, like a WordPress site, for example, or something like really basic. But in my mind, and again, this is my question to you, because I don't know the answer to this, this relationship, when you're talking about a generative AI vendor, I don't think it's the same as we've seen in previous kind of SaaS world, the SaaS space. Am I wrong here? Is there anything in that?
Well, you're definitely wrong, obviously. I mean,
clearly.
But as I said, there's a differentiation there, because SaaS is not the idea that you build something and then outsource somebody else to maintain that. That's a private cloud or semi-private cloud kind of things.
No, but that's SaaS, not what
products,
I mean.
SaaS products are always designed by a vendor to do something, and you figure out if whatever they build is something that fits. This will never be an end-to-end solution. It's a database, it's a web front-end, it's a Gen AI model. It's not the whole application. So even if you're going to use SaaS solutions, regardless of Gen AI or anything else, you still have to build all the boilerplate around it.
Yeah.
And that actually makes things a lot harder, because if you build stuff in-house, you can kind of see, this is the hardware I have this platform, I have this interaction, I have these. You can kind of build standard libraries to make deployment faster. If you're going to use something in a SaaS cloud, you kind of have to take what the vendor has built and work around all the things. And from personal experience, I've had integrated all the MP4 creations and uploading to YouTube. I had a script that did it all. It was a great script. I just pressed one button, everything was done. It worked for 2 weeks because then they changed the API. So these things make it maybe sometimes faster to have an MVP, a minimum viable product out. But once you go into full production, it only makes things harder, in my opinion. Now, that's just from the point of view of what a SaaS solution is. When you now specifically talk about GenAI, I think half of the world today, and in the future more than half of the world, will refuse to use these models because of privacy issues. And actually, it's not just GenAI, because any kind of machine learning model, if you want to have the model score your data point or inference your data point, as it's called, you have to send the data to the model. And sometimes you can anonymize that data, but sometimes the anonymized data is the data you need to run through the model. So the moment it's using a SaaS solution somewhere, which typically are running on US servers or US company owned servers, we're in Europe. It's a big problem. In the US, it's a bit of a less problem because there it is data local there. But the whole privacy thing is also something that usually stops all of these projects at stage zero. I mean, I work mostly with public sector customers, and there still today, the rule is cloud. Okay, if something is happening in the cloud anyway, it can stay in the cloud. Web portals, web front ends, things like that. But things that are not on the cloud, no, you can't go there unless you have a very real reason why that's the only way to make it work. And at the moment, it's mostly public sectors being careful. A lot of the commercial entities have kind of jumped on this new hype because they had to be seen as a high-tech, open-minded, future-thinking company entity. If you don't do AI, you're obsolete anyway. So they had to kind of do it. But there's been a lot of, not scandals, but still problems that people are going to come kind of coming back again from cloud things. So that's also why SaaS is a problem more than a thing, because when we just talked about this is something you're going to spend time on for the rest of your life and your children's life and your children's children's life. But if at any point somebody can pull the plug, or you have to say, no, it has to come back on premise now because I can't do it in the cloud anymore. All that time is, well, you learn stuff, which is always good, but a lot of things need to be done again. And at the moment, the stuff you can deploy on premise for normal, quote unquote, normal artificial intelligence, like regressions, classifications, random forest. Yeah, there's stuff you can download. That'll work fine. Those are relatively small and yeah, that'll work. But neural networks and definitely these LLMs. I mean, I forgot how many GPUs NVIDIA had running to train their AI models, but it's not tens, it's not hundreds and thousands, it's tens of thousands continuously. You're not going to put that on premise. And that's actually something you mentioned earlier, the training of a model, neural networks of the size of a generative AI LLM, large language model, is typically not done by users of those models, but only by the vendors of the service towards that model. And then they kind of make a smaller version that you can download, because the Gemini you can download is not the Gemini that Google uses on Google Search and things like that. There's big differences there. Try them out, you'll see. But yeah, retraining something is also something you can't do. And if you're in a SaaS service, it's something you can't do. You don't get access to that thing. The company that provides the SaaS service will define when it needs to be trained. At the moment, that's not a big problem, because there's only like 3 or 4 vendors out there that have decent models, and they have a vested interest to keep retraining because there's a big race going on at the moment. But the more diversification happens in the models, the more vendors you will get. And if I have a model that's great for legal stuff and it outpaces all the rest on the legal stuff, but nothing else, I am no longer that same rat race until somebody else also does the legal thing. So we'll get some different fragmentation there. And in the SaaS world, that's good for the competition. Competition is always good, but it is not a stable situation there. That's definitely something to be careful about. So SaaS can make it fast to have an MVP out. And by the way, every vendor, dear listener, every vendor that you listen to is always lyric about the how fast, look, click, 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 and it's done. Yes, that's an MVP. It doesn't have security. It doesn't have integrations. It doesn't have all the things that actually you need to make it productive. MVPs are quick and easy to build because they're quick and easy to build. They're basically built for that. that is not indicative of the time required. And also don't underestimate, and I'm going to stop talking, underestimate the amount of time required for internal legalese. Your CERT, your CISOs, your InfoSec, your security people, they will all want to take a look at these machine learning things, because anything the machine says, you need to be able to show why it said that. And by definition, neural networks are black boxes. So you cannot do that. It's impossible to do that. You can only guesstimate. So at the moment, the most people do is kind of assemble the documents that were used by the algorithm to decide something. But even that is not always possible.
Yeah. And then the other part of that is also you may well be liable for whatever it you is are. That the system has said.
Read the small print.
Yeah. I think it's still at the moment, if you look at ChatGPT, like below the prompt and where it spits out the results, there is a little bit of text that says something along the lines of, please check the answers or verify the answers for anything important, or something along those kind of lines. You know, that's their equivalent of a disclaimer when something decides that you should put glue on pizza, or eating a certain number of stones per day is a good thing.
Yeah, it's even worse than that, because remember a couple of months ago the Disney fiasco where somebody ate at a Disney restaurant and got sick. They sued Disney, and Disney came back. You can't sue us because you have a Disney Plus subscription, and there you say you will never sue Disney. So forget it. You are liable. It's never going to change.
Yeah.
So if we would have to say, how long does it take to have a GenAI backed solution up and running that is production ready? What kind of a time would you put on that? Because you say they underestimate. What would be a decent? I mean, it's a poison question. I mean, whatever you're going to say is going to be wrong.
How long is a piece of string? Like how simple is the problem that you're trying to solve? How familiar are you and your team with the technologies that you're trying to use?
A while ago, I bought an Ethernet cable. The guy asked me, how long do you want it? For the rest of my life?
Yeah. Piece of string. I think the answer is whatever amount of time you think it's going to take, probably add an order of magnitude on, and maybe you won't be too far out. But
I can go a little bit more concrete and say that with the experience I've had in the last year, 2 years, from the point that you say, okay, we have a budget, we have a team, we can start working on this, and you have your vendor selected, and you're pressing the go button, take a year.
Yeah.
At minimum. And after that year, you will have something that is presentable, usable, definitely not finished.
Yeah.
Because again, this is never finished.
Yeah. Well, given the fact that we're talking about the time commitment needed,
we're running out of time.
I think we are indeed. And unless there's anything else from you?
Nope, no more time.
Then that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org, or even comment on the YouTube videos. I've had a few of those recently. But until next time, my name is No More Time Left Dave.
And my name is Time Copial.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.